This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Welcome back to Finding Your Identity in Your Autism Journey. I'm your host, Ruth Castle, and today's episode explores a path of healing that may be new or even controversial to some of you. We're diving into a world of homeopathic and how it may provide support for families raising children on the autism spectrum. Joining me is Dr. Jamie Oskin, a board-certified naturopathic physician and a board-certified naturopathic physician and diplomat of homeopathic medicine. Dr. Oskin has dedicated his practice to developmental disorders, including autism, and bringing a wealth of knowledge in both classical, homeopathic, and integrative care. This conversation is not about choosing sides. It's about opening doors, asking deeper questions, and learning what else might be out there to support our children's complex needs. Let's get into it. Thank you, Dr. Oskin, for being on the show today.
Welcome. Thanks for having me.
Yes, yes. I'm so excited to have you here today. I want to, you know, really dive deep into this topic today. So how did you get into naturopathic medicine and why homeopathic?
It's a great question. I think, like most people get into certain things of passion, it comes from a personal story. So I had my own health issues, particularly when I was a teenager. I had a really bad baseball injury, was in a cast for 5 months, gained a lot of weight, ended up kind of going down a bad path. By the time I was in my early 20s, my health had deteriorated significantly, and I was pre-diabetic, and conventional medicine really didn't seem to offer solutions other than medications that were Band-Aids. So
yeah.
Really like finding out how to change my lifestyle and use natural medicine allowed me to reverse the prediabetes, which has been gone for over 20 years. And as a result, I had kind of, I don't know what you call it, like a quarter life crisis or a crisis of conscience where I decided to go back to school to do study pre-med. And I was looking for natural health options for a career to help other people on their health journey. And I found naturopathic medicine. So I went to a 4-year naturopathic medical school in Tempe, Arizona. At the time, it was called Southwest College of Naturopathic Medicine. Now it's Sonoran University. And I completed 4 years there, medical school, passed boards, that kind of thing, licensing exams. And then I did 2 years of residency. So I did a 1-year family practice residency, followed by a 2nd-year specialty focus residency in homeopathic medicine. It's the only selective residency in homeopathy for a licensed medical professional in the United States. And I've been Wow. one of maybe 13 to 15 graduates. I was the second person to go through that program. So I'm very fortunate to have had that extra training. And really, the question is like, how did I get bit by the bug with homeopathy as a certain therapy? Because homeopathy on the surface sounds you know, kind of bizarre or maybe weird or implausible. And certainly I was skeptical at first, and I didn't even give it much credence until I was probably in the middle of my third year, maybe towards the latter part of my third year of my medical career. And at the time, I was also getting a four-year master's degree in acupuncture, and I would go to medical school Monday through Friday, and on the weekends, I would go all day Saturday and Sunday to acupuncture school to get a master's degree. And I was 2 years into this master's degree. And at that time, I had a personal health issue, an injury. We call it costochondritis, chondritis, but it's like a inflammation between the ribs that had caused me a lot of pain. And it would like literally stop me in my tracks, and I would stop breathing. Wow. And like fall to the floor because it was such intense pain between the ribs. And I was in class one day, and I asked my teacher who was teaching homeopathy, I said, do you think homeopathy could help this? And he said, yeah, sure. You know, sign up to be a patient in the clinic and come and see me in the clinic. So I came in and he gave me a homeopathic medicine, and it kind of miraculously just went away. And I kind of thought, wow, there must be something to this. So that kind of really started me on my journey. And then really towards the end of my third year and all throughout my fourth year of medical school, I had homeopathy rotations. And in naturopathic medical school, you have different rotations like cardiology and that kind of thing, but you also have different therapy rotations where you would study like acupuncture or physical medicine and that kind of thing. So there were dedicated rotations to homeopathy. And when I started seeing it in the clinic and seeing some really remarkable results, I remember this man who had idiopathic urticaria. That means idiopathic means of no known cause. So he had hives for no known reason. Probably now, 18 years, 20 years later, they probably would call that MCAS, mast cell activation syndrome. Mm-hmm. But at the time, they just called it like unknown hive. And he had, you know, tried all sorts of treatments and steroids and everything, and nothing would make it go away. And like literally on a month on this homeopathic medicine, it got better. And it was like, wow, there must be something to this, as bizarre as it sounds. So I kind of got really into it. And at that point, I loved Chinese medicine and acupuncture. I loved homeopathy. Uh-huh. But I really realized that both were complete systems of medicine that you could spend an entire lifetime mastering. Yes. And so at that point, probably the first thing I ever really quit in my life, I quit acupuncture school, and just walked away from all the time and investment I had put into that and said, I'm going to dive headfirst into learning homeopathy. And I haven't turned back. And it's been a very rewarding journey over the last 17 years that I've been in clinical practice.
Well, you know, even though you walked away from it, you probably took some great valuable information from it that you probably integrate into your practice, you know, in a bit. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, well, and there's certainly beautiful things about Chinese philosophy and the way they approach medicine and that kind of thing that is different than the Western perspective. And certainly there are patients who benefit from it greatly. You know, in my journey in the first early years of practice and residency, where I really identified that I loved working with children and ended up, you know, focusing more on children, you know, it became clear that homeopathy was really a great therapy for them, because it's a really safe, gentle, natural system of medicine that's very easy to administer, even with really picky eaters. Yes. So, you know, something like Chinese medicine, most of the herbs are really, they taste pretty yucky. And then, of course, trying to do acupuncture on a child, let alone a child with special needs, would be very difficult.
Yeah.
So, you know, homeopathy turned out to be this, you know, really beautiful therapy that really opened doors to helping that patient population.
Yeah, I agree with that. You know, I've thought about doing acupuncture, and it would be, I don't know, not, I don't think it would be very enjoyable for my son. You know what I mean? Like, I just can't see that happening. Maybe later. I don't know. You know?
Or maybe acupressure, you know, rather than acupuncture.
Exactly. Exactly. Seeing the needles maybe come, and it wouldn't be a great idea, you know?
Right.
So let's talk a little bit more about like understanding how homeopathic works, like some of the core principles. You know, I'm familiar with it, but some of the listeners out there, they're not as maybe not as familiar, or maybe they're kind of, you know, like maybe thinking a little taboo about homeopathic. So let's talk about some of the core principles.
Yeah. So the main core principle in homeopathy is like cures like, and everything else is kind of commentary. There are some other core principles like holism, individualization, and the vis medicatrix naturae, which means the healing power of nature. I can go into each of these principles, but like cures like is really the core. And what that means is if you give a substance that in healthy individuals would produce similar symptoms, it will remove those symptoms or trigger an adaptive healing response in a sick person. So let me give you some analogies.
Probably the
most easy analogy for many people to understand would be allergies.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay, no insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Shots. So this is actually a conventional medicine use of like cures like. Of course, I don't think they identify that as homeopathic, but philosophically it is. And what they're doing in an allergy shot is they actually give the person a shot of something they're allergic to, but in a small dose. And the response, certainly Ruth, you have experience in the pharmacy world, the response is dose dependent. So
Right. Any
medicine has a dose dependent response. And if you gave an allergic person a very large dose of their allergen, they could have a bad reaction. And if they have an IgE anaphylactic allergy, they could have like a life-threatening allergic response to that allergy.
Mm-hmm.
In a small dose, what happens is it's a mild stressor on the system that then triggers an adaptive resilience or adaptive homeostatic response from the organism. So that's, over time, what happens is you gradually develop a tolerance to this stressor,
mm-hmm.
and no longer have an overreactive allergic response, but you've developed a tolerance to it. And there are lots of examples of this. For example, in OCD, which is a common symptom in autism spectrum, in conventional OCD therapy, the main therapy is not cognitive behavioral therapy, because cognitive behavioral therapy doesn't work very well for OCD.
Right.
The main known therapy is ERP, exposure response. So Yes. In exposure response, somebody is experiencing OCD symptoms, like they're afraid that they have to check the locks 50 times. They actually expose them to the lock and make them endure not giving in to the exposure. And the more they kind of like give them mild stressors and extend the length of time that they can cope with that stress, they eventually have kind of like what's called an extinction burst, and their brain kind of rewires and learns that it doesn't have to be OCD about that thing. So there's lots of examples of the healing like cures like. Another example, like if you ask common cooks in restaurants, the best way to treat a burn, it's not to put it under cold water. Uh-huh. It's they actually will rub it over the heat, which is using like cures like. It's the heat actually, it's a mild stimulus that's mildly stressing, but not as bad as actually burning themselves. And if people take a bad burn and put it under cold water, it gives immediate temporary relief, what we call palliative relief. But then later, after that cold goes away, the body's response to the cold is to actually respond to the cold, and we get more blistering. And if you use the mild heat, it actually, the body's response is to heal that. So another good example would be exercise. So exercise is mildly, it should be mildly stressful if you're doing it right. If you do it wrong, you might overdo it and injure yourself, right? So again, it's dose response. The amount of stressor is dose responsive. So if you have a large amount of exercise and injure yourself, that's not good. If you don't do enough exercise and you're too sedentary, then that's not good either, or you won't get any benefit from whatever exercise it is you think you're doing. Maybe it's, you know, using your thumb to click the clicker on the TV is not enough exercise to get a benefit. So you have to get in that middle zone where you're stressing yourself enough that it causes a response from the body, but not so much that it hurts you.
Right.
And in that middle zone, you might actually feel sore for a few days after the exercise. But then what happens is the body has this amazing adaptivity to stress, to actually, you know, that Nietzsche quote, what doesn't kill us makes us stronger. So we come back even stronger. Mm-hmm. And if you are lifting weights, your muscles actually grow back stronger after the muscle tissues have torn. If it's cardiovascular exercise, your heart and your cardiovascular system develops more cardiovascular capacity. You actually grow new blood vessels and new capillary systems to, and your heart becomes more efficient at pumping. And so we also have to individualize. One of the key principles of homeopathy is we have to individualize. We could have 10 cases of autism or 10 cases of eczema, or name a disease name that in conventional medicine, there's a this for that kind of, here's a drug that we give for that condition. But in homeopathy, we individualize because we realize that the constellation of symptoms or the holistic pattern of symptoms could be different from one individual to the next. And certainly if we use the exercise analogy, you could understand that if we gave if we wanted to run a marathon, but all we did was lift weights, we probably wouldn't achieve our goal, right? Exactly. Because we're not stressing the body in a way that actually elicits an adaptive response from the body to become more tolerant and more adaptive to cardiovascular exercise and running to run a marathon, right? Exactly. So you have to customize and individualize the type of exercise you want to get the outcome you want, and just in the same way we do that with medicine. So the homeopathic medicines themselves are really safe, gentle, natural medicines. They're natural substances that have been in use for literally hundreds of years, some of them thousands of years, and they were recorded into kind of encyclopedic books with their indications. After they did experiments on the medicines, they recorded the experiments for the effects of the medicines, and then recorded them in kind of encyclopedic books that we call Materia Medica. So those medicines are also regulated by the government. Homeopathic medicine, the Homeopathic Pharmacopeia of the United States, is an official compendium, just like the USP, the United States Pharmacopeia, which has been in place since, I think it's 1937 or 1938, when the U.S. Food and Drug and Cosmetic Act was put in place that actually created the FDA. So homeopathic medicines have long been included in the law in the United States. And there is a governing body called the HPUS, the Homeopathic Pharmacopeia of the United States, that sets standards for how the medicines are produced and made. But for example, let's say there's a plant medicine like Pulsatilla or Lycopodium, or you know, these are medicines made from flowers or plants that have specific medicinal properties. Then they're created in a way that is specifically manufactured to meet homeopathic standards that are regulated and accepted. So I think that gives like a little introduction. I don't know if you have further questions about any of those other tenets, like, you know, or if that brought up questions for you.
Yeah, well, you know what? That actually brought up, you know, I'm glad you brought up, you know, the regulation piece, because a lot of people think that it's not a regulated area. And I don't understand that, because is, you know, and there's so much science behind it and there's so much data, and it is, you know, it does have regulations. You just don't make it, you know. And I also like the individuality of it. That's what it really drills down to, because you met one person with autism, you met one person, right?
Absolutely.
So
I always say the same thing. Yeah.
It's true, because like, that's why you have to take an individualized approach. You know, that's why I said, you know, in my podcast, I wanted to name Finding Your Identity. It's not about just yours, you know, it's about the father, it's about the mother, it's about the individual that's diagnosed with autism, the siblings. Is all, everybody that's in that household is affected in some way, some form by the diagnosis, you know? So that's why I say it's the individual approach. You have to look at it more in that aspect. And I love that about homeopathic, is that it is individualized to anyone, not just children on the spectrum. Like if, like you said, diabetes, you know, that's a big thing that, you know, a lot of people have diabetes. I think it's like 1 in 3 or something now. They're expecting the people to have diabetes at least type 2 in their lifetime, you know? So taking an individualized approach is key, in my opinion, to everyone's health.
Yeah, I mean, I could give you some simple examples. So, for example, let's say I have one autistic child who is extremely sensory sensitive. You know, they just extreme sensitivities to lights, smells, noises. They have extreme anger outbursts when they get upset, you know, something doesn't go their way, or they don't go, or their OCD gets triggered or whatever. Really violent, big anger outbursts. And they're really chilly. They tend to be chilly in disposition, which a conventional doctor may not care about. But to me, us, it's a pointer. To make part of the pattern, and they're really constipated. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now that
this podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long distance relationship, becoming a first step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
That child will benefit from one homeopathic medicine. Okay? Now, let's say another child, also constipated, also autistic, speech delay, cognitive delay. So we have some commonalities. One is the autism diagnosis. We have the commonality also of a physical complaint, the constipation. But this second child is sensory seeking. They're hyposensitive, meaning they don't have hypersensitivity to noise, lights, and they have hyposensitivity. Like they have extremely high pain tolerance. I've seen this many times in my career where these kids, it's almost like they're blissfully unaware, kind of in their own world. I've had parents say that their child broke their arm and it took a day or two to figure it out because the child had such a high pain tolerance. They never cried or complained. They just, you know, held their arm a little funny. And it took a while, and the parents felt horribly guilty that they, you know, waited 2 days to take the child to the hospital, but they had no indication because the child was just kind of like blissfully in their own world because they had such numbed or dulled sensory sensitivities. Mm-hmm. That child needs a totally different homeopathic medicine than child A. Now, yeah. Let's go to child A. It was hypersensitivity to senses. Child B, hyposensitivity. Both had constipation. Let's go to child C. Child C extremely perfectionistic with the OCD and has several sensory symptoms. And maybe they get like nauseous or vomit from food, that kind of thing, like intense sensory sensitivities, lights and noises. But they're really perfectionistic. And they also tend to, you know, like with the perfectionism, I have a case right now where I'm thinking of a boy who's done really well on this one medicine, where anytime mom would drive a different route, he would throw a tantrum because he memorized the routes. He had such a photographic memory. He would memorize the routes to go to school. And if like there was a road closure or something and she had to go a different route, he would get really upset and throw a tantrum, right? So this kind of perfectionism, but the child has really offensive diarrhea, okay? So in conventional medicine, this third child, needs a totally different medicine than A or B. And in conventional medicine, they're all just kind of lumped together as having similar psychological symptoms that put them under this big umbrella tent called autism.
Yes.
That's a big spectrum. It's very wide, and you could have very low functioning children that are nonverbal and have, you know, significant cognitive delay, or you could have, these kind of like Silicon Valley, what used to be called Asperger-y, you know, maybe they're socially awkward, but like brilliant computer programmers,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
So, but they have no social skills. So there's a wide variety. And in conventional medicine, they don't recognize that these kind of other symptoms, like the constipation or the sensory symptoms, that form a constellation of other patterns that are unique to that child. They don't really recognize them as part of one and the same.
Right.
So in conventional medicine, you know, I see these kids go to a gastro doctor and maybe they're put on Miralax for the constipation, and you know, another child that has diarrhea is put on, you know, some other medication for the diarrhea, as if they're unrelated to the autism. And yeah, the way we look at it, they're all interrelated.
Yes.
And they're holistic. It's part of the holistic part of homeopathy, is we look at the case holistically, all yes, the symptoms in the case that are syndromally related, even if conventional medicine did not think that those syndromes like constipation and sensory symptoms and speech delay the conventional medicine may not think those different syndromes of symptoms are related, but they are. Mm-hmm. And then we prescribe one homeopathic medicine to stimulate healing as a whole person across multiple planes. So when that child starts improving, you know, we start hearing, let's say child C, we start hearing that he's more flexible and he goes to, he doesn't get upset when mom changes the pattern on the way to school. You know, his core autism symptoms start improving, like speech and social interaction, eye contact, social emotional reciprocity. But all of a sudden these lifelong offensive diarrheas start going away.
Mm-hmm.
And he has normal poops. Right? So the child improves as a whole, you know, that gut-brain connection is so huge. And as the bowel improves, the child improves and the cognition improves and, right? And the sensory symptoms improve. So what we're looking for in homeopathy is to use one medicine as a stimulus to trigger an adaptive healing response in the organism across multiple planes.
Yes. Yes. And that's why I love homeopathy, you know, approach, the holistic of looking at it at a whole, is actually just beautiful, you know, and that's what they need. They need that. So I do want to ask one thing. I wanted to ask, you know, could you talk about the TBR2 and what exactly is that?
Yeah, so it's a little bit a technical question.
Okay.
This is more for homeopaths than lay people, but this is actually the TBR2, the Bernhardshausen Repertory Therapeutic Pocketbook Method by George Dimitriadis. George Dimitriadis is a scholar and a very famous homeopath in Sydney, Australia.
Okay.
He has a clinic there and he does research there. And a repertory is an index. So if you look at the book, I have these all computerized so like nowadays with computers, you can search for symptoms rapidly. But in other words, if we look at any symptom or anatomical location, it would give an index of the medicines that are useful in those that symptom. So one of the techniques that we do with homeopathy is we use this repertory, which is an index, in a computer program to look at all the symptoms in a case. And that helps us form that picture that's holistic, because if I put symptom 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, you know, like sensitive to light, sensitive to odors, sensitive to touch, sensitive to noise, speech delay, constipation, and anger outburst. Okay, let's say I put all those symptoms, I don't know how many that was, and I look at all those together in the computer program, it will pull the rubrics for what are the medicines in each of those rubrics, and then give me kind of like a mathematical analysis of what are the medicines that are holistically cover the whole case. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So then it gives me as the homeopath then a short list of medicines to then go and research in the Materia Medica, which are those books, the encyclopedic books of the experiments of the substances, to see which is the best matching medicine for this individual case. So there are different indexes. So there's a variety of different indexes. So for people who really get into homeopathy and want to study it, that's another topic I could recommend a school or schools, depending on, you know, the route people would want to go if they wanted to study homeopathy. But there are different kind of approaches. This is one index, and it's the one I'm an expert in and the one I use. And it happens to be like kind of a good old fashioned by the book kind of index. It doesn't have a lot of fluff or modern additions. It's really like just the pure data from the original pure experiments. And in that way, I'm a little old fashioned. Like I don't like adding a lot of like theory or modern fluff. I just stick to the facts. And that kind of repertory analysis allows that. So, but that's kind of like a technical technique of my job as a homeopath.
Okay, so let me ask you this too, because people either they misunderstand, you know, what homeopathic is, or they, you know, what are some myths that you would like to maybe bust about homeopathic medicine?
One myth is that it's just placebo. I mean, that's actually been, it's not true, and it's been proven several times in many studies. Uh-huh. There's a great group called HRI, the Homeopathic Research Institute. They're out of England, and they have a great website where they compile all the research. And just like anything, just like any drugs or anything else, there are some studies that are positive and favorable. There are others that they're not favorable. Just to make a blanket statement that it's no different than placebo is actually inaccurate.
Yes.
But you would have to actually look at specific studies and specific conditions and see how the trial fared for that specific thing. Another thing is that the dose is too small to have an effect. One of the tenets in homeopathy is the minimum dose. We try to use the safest, smallest dose.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long distance relationship, becoming a first step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Medicine possible. And Hahnemann, who was the doctor in Germany, who from the late 1700s to about 1842-ish, developed the system of homeopathy, a real genius in medicine. But he, and also in pharmacy, actually, he experimented with dosing of medicines over the course of 40 years. So it was probably not until 25 or 30 years into experiments that he actually started working with smaller doses and dilutions of medicines. And it really had to do with this idea of, we take as physicians the Hippocratic Oath, first do no harm. And so the key in any medicine is how can you use the smallest dose with the biggest effect, right?
Right.
And the safest with the least amount of side effects. So when he experimented with that, he kind of realized that you were able to get very small amounts of medicines to still have a therapeutic effect if the person was sensitive to the substance. So going back to our allergy analogy, you know, like if you were not allergic to dog dander and you went to the allergist and they gave you shots of dog dander, what would happen?
Nothing's going to happen.
Nothing. In fact, that's what they do, actually. They do what's called skin prick tests, and they put rows of things on people's backs, and then they inject you with all these dog, cat, mesquite tree, you know, Bermuda grass, chicken, whatever it is they're testing, sunflower seeds, milk, you know, and then they see what actually causes a reaction and what causes hives to grow. Mm-hmm. And so if you're not sensitive to that substance, even in a small dose, nothing will happen. It's only the people that are predisposed to be sensitive to that substance that will have a reaction to it.
Right.
And because they're hypersensitive to that substance, they will have a reaction even in a small dose. So, okay. You know, like I live in Arizona, so a lot of my neighbors have like citrus trees. And so, you know, come January, everything's like full bloom and everything. So, you know, there might be a day where, you know, my wife wakes up and she's all stuffy, but I'm not. Well, why, right? Those pollen molecules were tiny molecules.
Yes.
They flew through the air. In fact, they were kind of invisible to the naked eye without a microscope, you know, and happened to land on her nose inside her bed, inside the house, even though the orange trees weren't in our house. And they were not even in our yard. They were in our neighbor's yard, right? And yet they still could trigger an allergic response. So our response to substances is dose dependent, but also the primer has to be pumped. In other words, people have to be susceptible. So if someone was susceptible to a certain medicine because they had symptoms that corresponded and was a good match for that medicine, then even in a small dose, they will respond. So I think that's the biggest criticism of homeopathy. It's there's a great book by a colleague. In fact, I have it in my drawer. It's called Homeopathy Beyond Flat Earth Medicine by Timothy Dooley, MD, ND. He's both a medical doctor and a naturopathic doctor. And for several years, he was actually an emergency medicine physician in a hospital. And he's a homeopath. He wrote this beautiful book, Homeopathy Beyond Flat Earth Medicine. If you go to beyondflatearth.com, you can download the first edition of the book as a PDF for free. If you want the second edition, you can purchase it.
Okay.
I gift it to all my new clients and patients. But it really is like a basic intro for new students and patients, really, to learn the system. And so that you could be a better patient and better part of the process. But it's really well done, easy to read book. So that's probably the biggest criticism. And I think that the title of the book, Beyond Flat Earth, is really descriptive, because I think so much of human history, you know, we've had people that are kind of skeptics or naysayers that say, well, this can't be true. And that's really not science. Science is actually observing something, and does it have a cause and effect, and can you measure it, and does it work, essentially? Mm-hmm. And, you know, certainly the naysayers thought that the the Earth was the center of the solar system, before Copernicus. Mm-hmm. Galileo was you know, vilified for that. And exactly. And we've had many other examples in history where things that we thought that were true turned out to not be true. And certainly gravity existed before Newton figured out.
Yeah, that it was.
and it still exists now, but our human understanding of it, you know, is simply our ability to observe and accurately document it. But whether or not it exists really has no bearing on reality.
Yeah. And I like what you said too, you know, about, you know, you give them as a new patient, you know, you give them a book or, you know, something that they need to work on as well. You know, I feel like that's so important. And I try to stress that with, you know, my son's in a lot of therapies. I do a lot with him. I homeschool him, all the nine yards with him. However, you know, if you're not putting in the work as well as the parent, the therapy really doesn't carry over. And it doesn't matter really what you're doing. You have to be on board with what you're doing with your child, you know, no matter what it is.
Absolutely.
And I love that you give that.
Yeah, and I find that, you know, the people who actually take the time to read it, they become really excellent clients and patients. They, you know, they, number one, they get it. They understand what I need to help them get better and or to help their child. And they become more attentive and attuned observers so they can give me better histories and better details and better observations so that I can do a better job. And it's a win-win all around. And you brought up a really important point that I'd like to touch on, which is that, you know, the therapies and everything else, I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that autism is not merely a psychiatric diagnosis. It is in the DSM. It's defined in the DSM. And I think that is a medical error. Personally, I don't think that it should be defined solely as a psychological disorder. And it's because the weight of evidence has become increasingly large that it's not simply a medical condition, but there is a biomedical component of it. Mm-hmm. And there's a nature and nurture aspect to everything, right? Like if you are at risk of getting strep throat, your kid goes to class and they're a five-year-old in kindergarten and there are 30 kids in class. And one kid has strep throat, there are a percentage of other kids in the class who will also get sick. Now, let's say all of them are exposed, not all of them will get sick.
Right.
So it's only the environmental stressor component of that disease model is the bug, the actual strep pharyngitis, right? The strep pyrogenes. But it's only the susceptible who actually fall ill. Okay. So in that model, there's a little bit of nature and a little bit of nurture in every case, and it's different in every case. The nature or genetics or heritability is a very strong component, and some environmental stressors are very strong components. And we now know there's a excellent lab test. This is more, not on the homeopathy side, this is more what we would call probably functional medicine. Mm-hmm. But there's a test that I'm very fond of called the folic acid receptor antibody test. And I've been doing this test probably 8 years. I don't know. I've lost track how long I've been using this test with patients. But it tests for an autoimmune reaction in the brain at the folate receptor. And in the double-blind study, one of the things that they found that compared to placebo that they had the biggest response when they treated kids who tested positive, was improvement in speech. They had other speech and communication. They had other gains as well. But they found, depending on the research study, because there have been several studies have been done, 40 to 60% of kids on the spectrum have this one autoantibody. Now, that means their immune system is attacking the brain at this specific spot. Now, this is the only one of the ones we know about. There's so much that we don't know yet, and we have to be humble as healthcare professionals. There's so much we don't know yet that we're still learning.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
But if 40 to 60% of children on the spectrum have this thing, this immune response that's attacking their brain, and then if you treat them with a therapy, in this case, it's to give them a high dose folinic acid, which is it's a vitamin in high dose, but to give them the nutrient that their brain is deficient in, and they show improvement in their symptoms, it lets us know that there is a biological or immune component to their symptoms, and it's not purely psychological.
Yes.
Okay. And I think that is so important, whether you're looking at things from the homeopathic perspective or the functional medicine perspective or even the therapy perspective, because this nature-nurture push-pull side of things is inherent in every healing journey. Mm-hmm. And what I very often hear from therapists and also from parents is that when the children start improving with the natural medicine that's helping to heal their brain, they make faster progress in therapy. So I've heard many times that, like, we've been in speech therapy for 2 years and it's like banging our head against the wall, and all of a sudden things are starting to click, you know?
Yes.
And I have a few therapists that refer me several people. And why? Because they say, well, the people that see you make faster progress in therapy. And it's not just me. There are lots of other good functional medicine or homeopathic practitioners out there. But, you know, when children are getting support, whether it's nutritional or homeopathic or functional medicine, when they're getting the support to actually heal some of the underlying inflammation, if that is present, or if you can find it, because in some cases we don't know yet. There may be other things going on that we don't know in certain kids that are poor responders or non-responders to treatment. You know, I don't give up hope. It may be that we just haven't figured it out yet for that child. So, but the more we can bolster the nature side of things by making the brain healthier, the more the nurturing from the environment and the therapies works even better.
Yes. Yes, I can see that tandem piece, because I see a lot with my son and the things that, you know, I do with him. And because he's a level 3, so he's actually technically a level 3-3. So in both domains, he's a level 3. He also has severe apraxia. But before he even received his diagnosis, you know, I said to the doctor that was doing it, I was like, do you excuse me? I can take him to the restroom. He needs to go to the potty. And he's like, oh, that's interesting. And he said, the reason why he said that, he's like, most children that the diagnosis I'm going to be giving him will never be potty trained. And I was like, oh. But my son is fully potty trained. Have we had constipation issues in the past? Of course. And I've worked very hard to, you know, make sure he can do that through, you know, certain mm-hmm. processes to help him with his gut health, because I do believe that's where we need to start. Because mm-hmm. I do think that sometimes it's more, like you said, more than just, you know, in the psyche, in the mind. It is not. I think it's more like autoimmune disorder sometimes. That's how I approach it and look at it with my son a lot, because he can do many things that they said he couldn't ever do with his diagnosis.
Good for you.
So.
Yeah, you keep fighting for him. And the thing is that really, I think if we were to more accurately classify autism as a diagnosis, in my personal opinion, it would be as a sensory motor neuron disorder.
Yeah.
Because and some of those kids we can identify have an autoimmune or inflammatory component. Other kids, they may have similar constellation of symptoms, but we can't identify that, and it may be something else. But that's just because, you know, medicine is only where it's at, and we're always researching and making new discoveries. So,
right.
In that case, you know, what's causing the sensory motor neuron disorder is it could be lots of different things for different children. But in this case, you know, the speech apraxia is like basically a motor neuron disorder of speech. And one thing that's important to think about, especially if your child is potty trained, which is beautiful and probably also very stress relieving for you, is that language and speech are in different components of the brain.
Yes.
Language is, you know, we have this idea that children who are nonverbal are mentally retarded, and it's not true. I have met so many brilliant, special, gifted, amazing children that are trapped inside a body that doesn't work great. Like they don't have great balance and their sensory system is on fire and they can't talk because they can't get the complex motor functioning.
Yes.
You know, to get the air to move through their vocal cords and to move their mouth and their tongue and their lips and all in the coordination to say the words that are in their mind. Mm-hmm. And yet they have the language, you know, like to be able to learn how to potty train indicates that there has to be some sort of understanding of certain language, right? And yet there's still such big hurdles because there's so many parts of their body that just don't work easily that make it hard because of this kind of like sensory motor neuron deficit. And, you know, if we think about something like ALS and Stephen Hawking, you know, like he's, you know, considered a genius for discovering black holes and all the, you know, the physics stuff. And you know, his body doesn't work and he's strapped to a wheelchair and can't talk and, you know, has to use a device to talk for him. But he at one point could talk and now can't and lost the ability. And yet it's almost like the reverse of autism, right? Like in autism, there's something that's not going, not functioning neurotypically in the brain. And as a result, those neurons aren't working properly, but it doesn't mean that those children aren't intelligent.
Right.
I have found over and over again that they're highly intelligent, but often trapped in a body that's not working for them. And if you were stuck in a body that wouldn't work for you, wouldn't you
be frustrated,
have OCD and trying to like control your environment and, you know, if you had sensory overload, wouldn't you be kind of like throwing tantrums and, you know, having a difficult time, especially if you couldn't speak and communicate to your most loved ones, like your mother, like, this is really bothering me because I just walked into Walmart and I can see all the fluorescent lights flickering, even though you can't, and it's driving me batty.
Exactly. You know? And I love that you brought up the language piece because my son, he does spelling to communicate on letterboards.
Awesome.
And we have an apraxic OT and we work, I don't know if you've ever heard of spellers.
Spellers?
Yes. Dana Johnson is one of his spelling practitioners that he's worked with. So
awesome.
We go there every Thursday and we work on that. And I work with him at home and he's doing great. And he can spell on an eighth grade level. He's doing really well with that. And he's only 7. And we've been doing it since he was 5. And he's also, he does AAC device. He's on a 77 grid. That means that there's 77 little icons on the grid. We got released from speech therapy. Remember, my child's still nonverbal. We got released from speech therapy because they said they couldn't do anymore for him. So we got found a new speech therapist. But the reason why they released him was because his language and comprehension was so vast that they couldn't do anymore. They said I needed to find a prompt speech therapist to help move with the motor in the mouth and make the sounds. And I finally found one that does that. So yes, he can communicate with me on his AAC. He's very, you know, well versed on that. Mm-hmm. But again, it goes to all that different, that individualized approach. You know, what works, what is working for my son is not always going to work for someone else, you know? And it always isn't going to work, you know. I try to take a holistic approach to all of his therapies. Like, yes, right. He's capable of, like you said, I knew when I got him potty trained, he understood everything I was saying. You know, right. How could he not, right? I couldn't have potty trained him. With that being said, I was like, okay, I'm going to keep moving forward. And he was also like watching YouTube videos and like stopping them at timestamps and asking for things like Q is for quesadilla. And he would ask for quesadilla. J is for juice. You know, he would memorize, you know,
a very small little boy.
Very small.
So, and this is my point. Cause even 15 years ago when I started in this area, even my own understanding of autism has changed in the last 17 years. But I think so much of the world's perception has changed. I think still the conventional model is still probably 20 years or 30 years behind. But
yeah.
But I think this S2C model is wonderful. I'm a big fan of S2C.
Yes.
And the spell to communicate. And there was a book, I read this book probably over a decade ago. It was way before S2C came out, and it was called Carly's Voice. I don't know if you ever heard of this book.
No.
There was a girl in Toronto. She was, it's a beautiful story, identical twins, I believe. And it's been a while, so forgive me. I haven't read the book in quite a while, but I believe they're identical twins. One was neurotypical and one was autistic, okay? And the family treated the autistic girl, had really severe symptoms like throwing massive tantrums on the floor and violent outbursts. And they treated her as if she was mentally retarded. They talked to her in front of her as if she didn't understand what was going on in the room. And one day when she was about 11, she typed a note to the family on the computer, and they were in shock. Not only were they partially they had amazing devastation and guilt that this whole time that they've been talking in front of her as if she's mentally retarded and she actually is highly intelligent. But it also opened the world to them to communicate. And she later learned how to type one finger at a time very slowly. And she, you know, would type messages. And they learned that when she was a teenager, she was interested in things that normal teenage girls her age were, like she was interested in boys and wanted to go on dates and things like that. And yet she was nonverbal. And this was before S2C. Now S2C is opening that kind of world and a therapeutic approach to many, many nonverbal children.
Yes.
In a way that is really kind of like bridging that gap to open their world, because before they're trapped in a body that's not working for them, but they have all this intelligence.
Yes.
It's like being stuck in a prison of their own body. And now they can kind of experience the world by communicating their, you know, their wants and needs and their brilliance and everything else. So congratulations for you for researching and getting your son that therapy. And I'm so happy to hear that.
Okay.
And, you know, from my perspective, these are the types of therapies that work very synergistically with what we do with the natural medicine. Because if from the natural medicine side of things, we start healing, you know, if they're constipated or having diarrhea and they're having these sensory symptoms, we heal all those things or help heal them. And they start having normal bowel movements and the gut-brain connection. 90% of the serotonin is made in the gut, not
yes.
in the brain.
Uh-huh.
So as the child's healing, as a whole person, we start to see, you know, other improvements in other areas. I have a young man, a number of cases that come to mind, but I have a young man I've been working with 7 years who's 32 and just a really wonderful young man. And I started working with him when he was 25. He had extreme sensitivity to lights, noises, and odors. I now only do telehealth. At the time, it was before COVID, and we would come to my office, and he would sit in my office. I would turn out all the lights. We would sit in the dark, and he would still wear full wraparound sunglasses
wow.
to completely block out any light because he was so sensitive.
Mm-hmm.
And he was extremely sensitive to odors. And he hated his parents because his whole life they had been cooking with all these strong odors in the kitchen. And it was like painful to him, painfully offensive to him. And he had all these digestive symptoms, and he had, you know, like he could talk, he had speech, but it really was not like conversational.
Right.
You know, hard to have a conversation that made sense. And slowly, gradually, we've been working together 7 years, but slowly, gradually, his bowels started getting better and totally normalized. 25 years of upset bowels, totally normalized. And his sensory symptoms normalized. He no longer has sensory symptoms. He'll wear sunglasses now. We live in Phoenix, Arizona. It's very sunny. If he goes outdoors, he'll wear normal sunglasses, not the wraparound, like, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But indoors, he doesn't wear sunglasses anymore. He is not bothered by his parents cooking anymore, by the smell, right? All those things have gradually improved. And now I can have a conversation with him where it's actually conversational. He can have back and forth. And even last month, his mother was telling me he's showing signs of increased ability to see other people's perspective and to have empathy and to solve complex problems, right? And now he can go, his parents can leave him for a weekend to go on a weekend vacation. He can take care of himself to get himself food, walk himself to the gym to exercise, walk himself to the store and buy himself snacks. He's not yet fully independent. He doesn't hold a job. But the level of independence he's gotten over the last 7 years has been remarkable. But it's also given him and his family a better quality of life because he is no longer plagued with constant digestive problems, right? He's no longer yes. plagued with like sensory things like lights and smells being so offensive to him that is like painful to him. Like from a neurologic perspective, it's painful to him to live in the world that is so overstimulating because his nervous system has damped down to be more regulated. Right.
And I will say, you know, even with doing spelling to communicate, you know, and how I supplement with him, taking that approach, it regulates them. And like you're saying, you know, his bowels was upset. And that's the second brain. That gut to brain really is a real thing. And trying to find that balance, I think, is definitely key to helping with their regulation, their symptoms, all of it.
Absolutely. So, you know, I think the biggest thing I've learned in cases like that young man's case is I never give up hope. And, you know, no practitioner, if any practitioner tells you they're 100% successful, run the other way. Because no one is 100% successful. There are always failed cases. And I have cases now that I can easily help that 10 years ago, I really struggled and didn't help. And there are cases now that I'm not able to help that hopefully in 10 years, I will be able to help. So even as doctors, we have to be humble that we are always learning. There's no promised land. It's just constantly trying to get better at our craft and better serve humanity. And in this way, you know, to give a young man or a child a better quality life improves, you know, their life, their parents' life, and you know, a lot less suffering. You know, he's not sitting by the toilet in abdominal pain all the time, right?
Yes.
So, you know, this gives him a better quality of life to be healthier. And the reason it gives me hope is if I can see those changes, even if slow and gradual in from 25 to 32, you know, the changes I can see in a child that I start treating when they're 2 or 3 or 4 or 8, you know, I have a gauge for what's possible. And, you know, we used to think that the brain was fixed, mm-hmm. but it's not. The brain, we now believe in science is, again, you know, like, you know, before and after Galileo, you know, science has changed its opinion of the brain. We no longer think the brain is rigid. We think it's what we call neuroplastic, that is adaptable, changeable, and can heal. Mm-hmm. And even things like OCD, there are studies with fMRI showing that the brain, with proper intervention, can actually develop new neural networks, create new neuron pathways to break free of those really strong OCD loops, break free of them, and create new neuron pathways. The brain is constantly adapting and changing. And even at the age of 50, if you took up a new sport or you took up a new hobby like piano, the brain would devote more neurons and grow and adapt to that new thing that you're learning.
Yes.
So because of that, I never give up hope, because I feel like even if I don't know what's possible for any individual child, I do know what's possible with, you know, cases that I've been able to help, that there is a brighter future, that we can give them a better quality of life. In some of those cases, it may mean giving them the ability to speak. Some may be improving their ability to use S2C. And helping with all their physical symptoms or sensory symptoms, et cetera.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Which, you know, if you can imagine if you had language delays, you know, like how, you know, it just begs the question, how often are we having behavior challenges in kids on the spectrum that we're trying to like almost like beat them over a head with ABA to get them to conform to neurotypical norms, mm-hmm. when if we just from their perspective understood that life is really hard because they're actually really smart inside there, but they can't communicate their needs because their body and their brain and their neurons aren't working properly. Mm-hmm. And so it's really frustrating because they feel trapped, and that's the only way they know how to communicate. If you learn as a toddler or someone on this spectrum that if you politely asked mom for help and said, "Hi, mommy, can you please change my poopy diaper?" And she says, "No, I'm cooking dinner, but when I'm done with this next thing and I can have a chance to move the pan, then I'll come change your poopy diaper." You know?
Yeah.
But if they learn that when they scream bloody murder, everything stops and you come running, right?
Yes.
What have they learned through positive reinforcement that way of communicating got them what they needed?
Exactly.
And in a world where they can't communicate, that may have been their only ability to get your attention and to get you. So,
yes.
So they actually learned that through positive reinforcement that's actually a communication method. And, you know, over time, as they get therapy and healing and everything else, you know, we can work on finding different or more effective ways to communicate, whether that's S2C or, you know, or vocalization, et cetera. But so that they can live as full a life as possible because they're brilliant, beautiful souls. But, you know, have the ability to express what's inside.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, we have talked so much about, you know, what it is. Is there anything that any strategies that you would recommend that parents could use or in the meantime, and maybe that they're waiting on a wait list to see a homeopathic or a functional medicine doctor, is there something that you could tell the parents that they can do?
Yeah, I mean, there are a few things. I mean, number one, from a therapy perspective, I think S2C is fantastic, and yeah, I highly recommend it in nonverbal children. There's another, there's a great book called Autism Breakthrough by Ron Kaufman, R-A-U-N, K-A-U-F-F-M-A-N, I believe is how you spell his name. It's on, you can get it on Amazon or Audible. And they have a program, Autism Treatment Centers of America. And it's a different style therapy than ABA, but I think it really gets to more of the core. I think as an alternative therapy, it's a really valuable therapy. And his book has lots of things. He calls them the activity time, where he gives lots of suggestions for parents for how to handle different situations.
Mm-hmm.
On the natural medicine side of things, I would look for, you know, a functional medicine doctor or a homeopathic doctor, depending on what you're looking for or what you need, that both has experience in those things and experience in autism, because you could, you know, find somebody that does functional medicine but has never seen an autistic child. And that's
mm-hmm.
Going to be a much bigger learning curve for both you and that doctor than somebody who's seen, you know, hundreds or thousands of cases. So, you know, there are a variety of different websites out there. On the homeopathy side, there's the HANP, the Homeopathic Academy of Naturopathic Physicians, is the organization that's all the naturopathic doctors that have subspecialized in homeopathy. And so you can go to there and see the DHANPs, the diplomats who went through extra board certification to get their specialty designation. There's also the National Center for Homeopathy, which is a much bigger organization. And they have a practitioner portal with a broader range, not just naturopathic doctors, but other practitioners. Or the AIH, the American Institute of Homeopathy, which has many medical doctors or DOs who are also homeopaths. They have a practitioner portal there as well. So those would be great places. On the consumer side, if you want to get involved and learn more, there's a great organization called Americans for Homeopathy Choice, which is kind of a consumer advocacy organization, but they also do a lot of education for moms and parents and teach home care. And there's one of my former friends and colleagues from medical school teaches, it's called Med School for Moms, and I think medschoolformoms.com. And she actually teaches a lot of general pediatrics, not autism specific, but like, how do you use homeopathic medicines or herbal medicines, natural medicines for basic home self-care, you know, bumps mm-hmm. and bruises and, you know, things that don't require a pediatrician that you yeah. can, that are self-limiting, that you can do safely on your own. We don't want you kind of like, we don't want parents like going rogue and doing things that are dangerous with their children, but within the confines of safe, self-limiting conditions, like how can you use natural medicines to do things naturally at home?
Right.
The other organization that I would highly recommend taking a look at in their practitioner portal is MAPS. It's called medmaps.org. There's another MAPS organization that's the psychedelic organization. It's not the psychedelic organization. It is the Medical Academy of Pediatrics for Special Needs, which is medmaps.org. And they are the kind of functional medicine doctors, like medical doctors, DOs, chiropractors, naturopathic doctors, nurse practitioners. They're the medical practitioners who have a more natural, holistic, functional medicine approach towards helping children with special needs, especially autism. That organization kind of grew out of an old organization called DAN, Defeat Autism Now. But it's a great organization. Those doctors on their website, you know, much more focused on like labs and supplements and or sometimes like medications or natural approaches to medications, but using medicines or natural substances or diet, nutrition in ways that kind of like support the body healing rather than just kind of palliatively, you know, using symptom control.
Right. Those are all really great resources. I'm going to post those in the show notes so the parents can see those and the books that you have mentioned too. Also, your website. I want to put that so people can get in contact with you too. I know I'm not opposed to like going across states, like, you know, looking outside of the state of Florida to go to different places to get care for my son, because sometimes it's just so hard here to to find what you need, what they need. You know, especially just like you said, you might find a functional doctor, but maybe they've never, you know, had an autistic child on their case, on their caseload. So, you know, and I know many parents like myself, we look for and, you know, go in different areas to find that too. I want to ask, you know, was there a case, you know, a very close case to you that, you know, you had the best results out of, and like how that journey like shaped you and like maybe changed how you view some things?
Gosh, there's a lot of cases. I'll start with when I was really new into practice. You know, I was young, I had more hair, I didn't have a lot of patients. I knew I liked kids, and this young boy came into my practice. He was 22 months old, and he had ear tubes. He was speech delayed, had ear tubes, and he had 15 rounds of antibiotics in 22 months for ear infections, and was still getting an ear infection every 3 or 4 weeks. And even with the ear tubes, they would just see the goop coming out of his ear. It's just that with the ear tubes, they would drain. But the antibiotics would stop the infections, but they treated each individual infection, but they didn't stop the infections from happening.
Right.
And we started working with him with natural medicine and primarily homeopathy, you know. Within 6 months, he only had one ear infection that I can remember after I started treating him. And it was when they were out of town at Disney, which is like Murphy's Law. And they went to urgent care and got antibiotics for it. But aside from that, he never had another ear infection. He went from being language delayed, which is probably related to the fact that he couldn't hear because his ears were so clogged, to advanced with language. That little boy is now like an upperclassman in high school and like a jock who plays lacrosse and football. And I see pictures on social media, and you know, I haven't seen him as a patient in many, many years, but that case really inspired me to treat children, and how, like, you know, changing one variable that like stopped this child from having ear infections and improved their speech and his development really changed the trajectory of that kid's life.
Yes.
I started seeing more and more kids and more children with special needs start getting referred to me. And that's really how it grew, and my love of helping families in this way. And there's just so many cases. I'm trying to think if there's maybe a good one to – I have a few that are they're interesting that I could share with you. One, this young woman is about 22. I've been working with her a couple of years, and she also has an autistic brother. He's not under my care. She is probably cognitively around the age of like a second or third grader, but she would like hallucinate, kind of. She was obsessed with YouTube characters. And would basically get into these like big drawn out fights with these imaginary characters, to the point of like putting holes in the wall, you know, like getting lots of disturbances from neighbors on a regular basis. Like, it was really problematic, and the family couldn't really control. And between a combination of homeopathic medicine and that girl is also frat positive, and so we treated her with leucovorin. And also dietary change. She had a lot of gut issues. And for her, a dairy-free and especially gluten-free diet was a game changer. She completely stopped having these kind of like hallucinations and outbursts and, you know, yelling at imaginary characters and putting holes in walls. And now, like, the parents are working on getting her into a work program because she, you know, finished her special education high school. And she's, like, very into writing fantasy stories. And she is, like, so passionate about it. She's constantly asking her dad to publish her fantasy stories.
That's so awesome.
And dad, yeah, what's special about it, dad says, it's funny because dad complained a lot when I changed their diet. And he would say, oh, this is so terrible. This is so hard. And then he tells me, oh, it's so hard. But if she slips up or she accidentally gets gluten, she goes crazy. But then we realize what happened. She got some gluten. We take it out of the diet. And all of a sudden she stops putting holes in the wall. She stops yelling at imaginary characters. And like she comes back to reality. And he said, now she gives me advice. You know, he said, it's more like a second or third grader, but he said, I can have a conversation with her now.
Yes.
And it's like amazing. I mean, this is a child that even into their late teens before I started working with them was having severe symptoms and now is getting a new lease on life. It's really, really remarkable. I have another young man. I can't remember. I think he's about 8 years old. I've been working with him maybe a little over a year. When he came to me, his speech delay was that he would only speak in scripts like a Jim Carrey character from The Mask.
Oh, okay.
It was like, if you could imagine, like he only had this like super goofy, you know, like communication, like he was literally a Jim Carrey character in The Mask, in the movie. And he didn't have back and forth conversation. He also had extremely high pain tolerance and he actually was athletic and they put him in football and he played great. But he had a lot of problems. Yeah, he would kind of like get himself into trouble because he's one of these kids that because he didn't feel pain would, you know, push his body to limits that probably weren't good, mm-hmm. even though it served him to be, you know, a good football player, it was probably injuring him, but he wouldn't feel it. And he would get migraine headaches and he also would get carsick. And even from the first month on the homeopathic medicine, he just had a remarkable, the over the top goofiness and silliness, like he was in kind of this alternate Jim Carrey world with the laughing and the, you know, the scripting and, it went away. He now has normal conversations. He's not 100% neurotypical, but you know, if you didn't know on the outside, you probably wouldn't be able to tell. You know, he has a more normal pain tolerance now and will complain if he gets injured in football rather than before where he would injure himself and not even notice. He rarely has migraine headaches anymore. He doesn't get car sick. So, you know, again, holistically, this child has improved. But it's given him a better quality of life because he can actually communicate. He had speech, but it was like goofy, almost like he was high or drunk or something like that, you know, with like the way he would like with the Jim Carrey talking and the over the top laughing. And, you know, I know there are a lot of functional medicine doctors that consider that a yeast overgrowth and that kind of thing. And they will treat the gut for gut dysbiosis for those types of symptoms. In this case, you know, homeopathy, safe, gentle, natural medicine, you know, really stimulated really dramatic healing. And, you know, he's made remarkable progress with just the homeopathic treatment. So those are just a few. I could go on and on, but those are some that come to the top of my mind.
So before we end today, what do you want to leave our listeners with? Well, you know, the parents that are listening and other professionals out there that are listening to the podcast.
I mean, the biggest thing I'd like you to remember is that, you know, the brain is neuroplastic and has an ability to heal. And never give up hope. And, you know, if you try working with a doctor for a year or 2 years or something, you're not making progress, maybe try another doctor. But, you know, just never give up hope. There are some cases that are hard. They're, for whatever reason, they may be challenging cases or they don't respond as well to certain treatments, you know, and you hear these other miraculous cases that just any therapy they give them, ABA or speech therapy or whatever, you know, nutritional supplement, and they change their diet and they cut out gluten and all of a sudden they start talking or whatever it is. Some cases work really well and, you know, magically in that way. And some cases are hard, but I never give up hope. And, you know, it's those cases like the young man who's now 32 that I've been working with since he was 25, who's just made slow, steady progress over 7 years that show me what's possible, because I know deep in my core that the brain can heal and it can change and adapt. And it also, you know, not there, there's the science with all the, like the studies of, for example, the FRAT test showing autoimmunity in the brain. We know that a large percentage of kids on the spectrum have neuroinflammation, brain inflammation. There's stuff going on. We know they have this gut stuff going on, gut-brain connection stuff. We know all that stuff biomedically, and yet it's still taking time to catch up with conventional medicine. But I never lose hope because I know what's possible. And so I hope that leaves you with a little hope that maybe if you, there's a therapy you haven't tried, it could be S2C, it could be Autism Treatment Centers of America, it could be homeopathy, it could be functional medicine, that there's something out there that maybe you heard today that inspires you, that says, okay, I'm going to give this a try and see if it helps give my child a better quality of life.
Yes. Thank you so much for being on the show today, Dr. Oskin. I really appreciate you coming on today and talking to our guest and, you know, bringing the world of homeopathic medicine to my listeners today.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been just an honor to be here. And if people want to find out more, they can go to my website, droskin.com.
Okay. Thank you so much. I hope today's conversation with Dr. Oskin explained your view of what's possible, whether you're new to homeopathic or exploring every option to help your child thrive. I encourage you to dive deeper into resources from Dr. Oskin made available. You can learn more by visiting droskin.com, where you'll find case studies, course information, and direct ways to get in touch. As always, thank you for being a part of this journey. Don't forget to subscribe and leave a review and share this episode with someone who needs it. Hope and direction today. Until next time, keep advocating, exploring, and remember, you are not alone on this journey.